welcome to the Browns Wire podcast. This is your host, Josh Keatley. With me is Donovan James. And we have a very special guest, our boss, editor of Browns Wire, Jeff Risden. Jeff, how you doing?
It is good to be with you. It's been a while since I've been on this, and I haven't been on since Donovan's been here. So I feel very welcome tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm as happy. Hey, shout out to Jeff with the old school Cavs hat, man. I like that. I'm rocking with that hat right there.
So I actually have one from I got it at a game in 1987, but it's really, really dirty. It's not fit for public consumption, but it's the old, you know, the blue with the orange Cavs on it. It's authentic. It's actually kind of wool. So.
Oh, the
you
know, Mark
back in the day, they didn't hit. Yeah. I was a that's my team. That's my personal favorite sports team of all time. I am a Cavs fan above all other fandoms. So
that's good, man. We got to talk Cavs basketball. You can hoop too, right? Can't you? You're tall. Dude.
I used to be able to. yeah, I'm a little washed now.
Oh man, it's all good. You can play with Mark Price probably, right?
He's a little quick for me. My quickness is gone now.
Well, I feel bad because my basketball knowledge is at zero. Donovan actually makes fun of me for that. I watch more arena football on my time on this earth than any NBA.
See, so, Don and I will be talking Cavs on another podcast soon.
Exactly. I'm like, how do you not watch basketball? You got Kyrie, K-Love, and LeBron,
I'd be willing to bet a big amount that I watch more fan-controlled football this season than NBA.
No kidding. Wow.
Oh yeah. I just can't get
the Cavs are good this year too. Sexland.
Sexland is fun.
Yeah.
I'm 5'6", 230. So I don't they're basketball players and basketball, the game doesn't relate to me.
That's not your build, man.
He's joking about 5'6".
If you Google me, it says I'm 5'9".
I know.
That is a lie.
We've met in person, Josh. You're not short. You're just not tall.
You're not tall.
I'm so short. I was deaf. Oh, I'm so short. But that's all right. I own it. But let's go. Let's talk some Browns.
Let's do it.
Jeff, I messaged you. I told Donovan the quote too. I like to listen to a lot of gambling podcasts, right? So I listened to a numbers game with Gil Alexander, and he had Jeff Schwartz on Monday, and I thought it was a little bit of a hot take. Your comment on it was much more mellow than I expected. But basically, to sum it up, Jeff Schwartz said that the Browns are going to run into a similar problem that the Rams ran into with Jared Goff, that they have to pay an average quarterback so much that it's going to cripple the rest of the team. So they have to make a determination as to whether or not they're going to do that or they're going to press the restart button. And he ended the conversation by also comparing it to the Carson Wentz situation and said Carson Wentz is even better than Jared Goff and Baker Mayfield, which I disagree with, but I want to hear your take on it. You're much more sensible than me.
Ooh. Yeah, so I understand the principle of what he's saying, that your teams are built to win while your quarterback is on his rookie contract. That's when you have the most salary flexibility, because if you pay that contract as the Rams did with Goff and as the Eagles did with Wentz, it handicaps what you can do. You've got to restructure your roster around that massive extension. The Eagles did not do a very good job of that. And also, Wentz fell off a cliff, had one of the worst seasons I've ever seen last year. I think his principle is right, but in the Brown situation, he's negating a couple of things. First off, I think Baker is better in Kevin Stefanski's offense that he's giving him credit for. I think he watched here and there. I think he's one of those people that sees that Odell Beckham didn't put up big numbers, that Jarvis Landry didn't put up big numbers, and, oh, that's on Baker. He's not getting the ball to those guys. And that's a narrative that I hear a lot nationally. I get it a lot when I'm on various podcasts and radio spots, and I try to dispel it as much as I can because that's not what this team's about. This team is about Baker getting the ball to the right guy at the right time, and he does that very well. I'm not sure that anybody – I wouldn't say anybody. There are some quarterbacks who could do it better, but in Stefanski's offense, Baker is a perfect fit, and I don't see that changing if he gets more money, and he deserves more money. I don't think that where the Browns are at as a team, too. Remember, this is a team that for years and years didn't keep anybody. Now that they do have some cap crunch because they got – you know, they paid Miles. They got to pay – you got to pay Denzel. They should pay Ward. They got some other mouths to feed. But it's a different situation than what Jeff is talking about. Now, if they're paying him what the Rams paid Jared Goff, you know, the 4 years, $134 million, then he's probably right. I don't think Baker's worth that. That's a lot of money, and that does handicap what you can do going forward. But I'm hopeful that the Browns are more financially prudent than that, and that they can use Jeff's point to go to Baker and say, hey, man, you know, your 2019 season, you weren't worth anything close to this. You know, you weren't all that good. Now, we obviously realized that wasn't on you. You've proven that was your anomaly season, but still there's that little bit of insecurity there. And I think Baker would be amenable to that. You know, if you get him like a 3-year extension, so you're not killing your cap forward, I think that's the way that you try to go with it. And I would do that this offseason. I wouldn't worry about, you know, having it cripple your team like that. The other thing is that I don't think he understands that the suffering, well, and he should, that the Browns have had in trying to find quarterbacks. We finally got a quarterback in Cleveland. How many freaking years have we been waiting for a quarterback that's even league average? And Baker's better than that. And you want to give that up to go through that search again? Hell no. No. So I don't think he understands the enormity of the point of Cleveland finding the quarterback. I think that's lost on him. I think that's lost on a lot of people too. And that does mean that Baker is more valuable to Cleveland than he would be in normal other situations. Where they go from, you know, quarterback A, who's a marginal Pro Bowler, to quarterback B, who's a marginal Pro Bowler, to quarterback C, who's an All Pro. That doesn't happen in Cleveland. The fact right. that they've got a guy who can play now, you've got to respect how much value that adds for Baker in Cleveland.
Absolutely, and that makes sense. I think that people underrate Baker, and I'm not really sure why. I view him as a top 10 quarterback already in this league. Do you feel the same way?
In 2020, he was. Heck yeah. Well, he was not in 2019. In 2018, right. he was trending that way. He obviously hoped that arc keeps ascending. Yeah, that's I don't have any problem saying that he's better now than Jared Goff or obviously Carson Wentz. I mean, yeah. Wentz has been brutal, man. That's
I agree with that. I was kind of shocked when he said that. That was kind of the icing on the cake when he said that Wentz is better than both of those. I'm like, I don't understand where they're seeing. I'm trying not to be biased.
He watched the Eagles, right? I mean, that.
I'm just saying. I was shocked. But, you know, and I don't – that's another reason I was questioning as to whether or not I was biased. I was having another conversation with a Bengals fan on Twitter, Adam Moore, who used to be on this podcast, and we were talking about the Bengals' needs, and I said if they don't address protecting Joe Burrow, that's an issue. And he said they need to add 10 more weapons. And I said, well, you know, look at Baker. Baker was phenomenal, and he had Landry and Higgins, and that was his whole wide. And Donovan Peoples-Jones, that was his receiver core. And he went on. He rebutted with, well, they rely on the run so heavily with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. But I didn't see that either. The last 6 weeks, I mean, they did. I think that is the game plan. That is the number one focus. But the last 6 weeks of the season, Baker Mayfield, I mean, he threw over 250, what, 4 out of 6 of those games while Chubb was kind of putting around once Teller got hurt? I mean, am I wrong?
No, Baker got a lot better after the bye, and it happens to coincide with when Beckham got injured. I think that's coincidental more than it's cause and effect there. But yeah, he played great down the stretch. He was good enough that you could win multiple playoff games with the Baker Mayfield that you had this year with the team that's around him. And I think where Schwartz has his point is that you don't want to overpay to keep a Baker Mayfield because he's not Deshaun Watson. He's not Patrick Mahomes. You know, he's not that level of player. He can be in that next tier though, and you can win a lot with guys in that tier if you're not overpaying them. And I think that's where his point lies for me is that you got to be careful. You don't want to pay him. You know, he can't be one of the 5 highest paid quarterbacks in the league. That's just not going to work. But if he's one of the 10 highest paid quarterbacks in the league, because like you said, Josh, he is a top 10 quarterback. I think that's fine.
I guess I could tell I'm a little bit biased though, because you said he was not as good as Watson and Mahomes definitively. You know,
he's not. You know, so we there was the whole hubbub about the Browns should trade for Deshaun Watson. Well, no, they shouldn't. But you can also acknowledge at the same time that Deshaun Watson is special. He is a different. He is a better player than Baker Mayfield. I don't have any problem saying that. That's not disrespectful to Baker Mayfield. That's what Deshaun Watson is.
Well, I mean, he's a franchise changer, man. Like Baker's in the group changing the franchise. He's not changing the franchise by himself.
That's a good way to put it.
Mahomes is clearly not even close. Like, I mean, besides the 12, I mean, he's playing on Sunday, but I mean, that's a totally different thing. But I mean, 15 is just, he's in a group by himself to me. Watson's damn near close to it,
though. Watson is close. I think Aaron Rodgers is still up there, he's at the other end of things.
That's a totally different, Like, those guys are thinking about the guys under 30. Those type of guys. I mean, Rodgers is clearly better too, obviously. But I mean, those guys under 30, Watson, Mahomes, all the younger, Justin Herbert. I mean, like those guys.
He looked good this year, though. Yeah.
Baker's, I've debated though, because I like Baker a lot. I said top 12, top 10, definitely like debatable. I would lean towards the bottom, like 8 to 12 range. That's where I
think. Maybe I'm just biased towards Cleveland quarterbacks, because I still think Brady Quinn and Charlie Fry, who are above me right now as we speak, were godsends.
You still like Colt McCoy, man.
I got upset. I was listening to Jeff's podcast on a podcast yesterday, talking about the Lions, and you bashed David Blau, and I got a little upset. I got a little worked up. Like, how could he?
Oh my God.
How could he say Blau gross? I'm really upset by that.
Don't talk to him about Taylor Heinicke. He'll get real pissed off, Jeff.
Oh, I love Taylor Heinicke.
Yeah. I like Taylor Swift Heinicke, man. That's my guy.
Taylor Swift Heinicke?
I've
never heard that.
We were at Shrine Game practices, and I was typing into my phone. You know, I'd like to live tweet what's going on. And my phone auto-corrected it to Taylor Swift Heinicke.
That's hilarious.
So I showed it to him and his dad, and they both laughed that they liked it. So he's always been Taylor Swift Heinicke for me. I like that dude. I like him. I love him as a backup quarterback. He's an ideal backup quarterback for me.
He's a perfect backup quarterback.
Anybody that won me games in college fantasy football, him and Ray Lowry, that was a dynamic duo. Man. Old opinion. That was a dynamic duo. But so you mentioned Denzel Ward. Do you think Denzel Ward deserves more cash now, or is that something we wait on? That was something.
I don't know, man. That's tell me where you guys are at in that, because I can be convinced either way.
Yeah, he deserves top five cornerback dollar.
He's hurt all the time, though. I agree. I would pay him, but that's because I pay everybody in Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta pay him, man. You gotta pay Denzel Ward. That's a top 10, top 5 cornerback.
That's the problem, is that when he is on the field, he's the best. So if you miss the boat on it, he's gone.
Their secondary is just so bad. Like already, like they can't lose him.
I'm largely with you on that. I am worried about the injuries, probably a little bit more than y'all are, but that's you can't let him. Also, the fact that he's a Clevelander. I mean, Nordonia High School, man. You got to respect a local kid playing for the local team that he grew up loving. I mean, that maybe he gives a little bit of a hometown discount for that. I don't know. Maybe he gives an injury discount. The fact that. You know, I wouldn't give him 5 years. He's the kind of guy that I would give a 2-year extension to. You know, 2 years, make him, $25 million over 2 years, most of it guaranteed. I think that in addition to what he's getting now, I think that puts him in commensurate with the level of cornerback that he is, one of the top five, top 10 cornerbacks in the league, whether he's healthy or not. I think that's where he belongs, and I would do that this offseason. I would get that done, and then kick that can a little bit. See if he can stay healthy for those next 2 years. If he does, then you give him – he'll still only be, 26, 27 at that point? 3 or 4 more prime years, that's when you give him the big deal. When he proves that he can stay healthy, you give him that little feeder deal in between. That's enough to, like, okay, they want me here. They're rewarding me, but I still have a little bit to prove. If he proves it then, that's when he gets the 6-year, $120 million contract that you could very well get at that point.
You know, it's funny you talk about getting the hometown deal and you know, rooting for him a little bit extra because he is from Cleveland. That was something I talked to Brad about last week, because he was talking about Curtis Samuel coming to the Browns. And a lot of Browns fans thought that was kind of a biased take because he's from Ohio State. I don't think there's anything wrong with if you think that there two players are in the same tier and one is from Ohio State or OU or Toledo. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with getting that extra budge, right? I mean, like, I mean, when Kareem Hunt is running the ball and you think of him in that Rockets helmet, it's kind of cool, right? Like, is that dumb and biased of me, or what do you think?
It is a little bit in the NFL, I think. I said a little bit.
Well, remember, the Browns were built on that, too. You know, Lou Groza, Dante Lavelli, right. Horace Gillum, Paul Brown. I mean, it's kind of – I feel like it's ingrained. Like, it's something you should appreciate a little bit.
I do think that the fans appreciate it, and I certainly do. I like seeing that. You know, I grew up playing – so I'm from Vermilion High School, class 1990. I grew up playing against Raymond Harris and Steve Tovar and guys yes. like that. And I wanted them in Cleveland forever. Brian DeMarco, you know, I wanted those guys to be Browns, and I know they were all Browns fans growing up too. So when you see those guys like that play elsewhere, you're like, man, I wish they could have come home. So yeah. I totally get that.
I guess I could see my, you know, what was it last year when they took Jordan Phillips over, the Ohio State linebacker? I can't remember his name now. And I was like, damn it, why? But I guess that I could see that being a little biased.
I just didn't like Jordan Phillips, so I was there.
Yeah.
Hope I'm wrong on that, but first year wasn't good.
No, I thought it was a bit of a reach too. I mean, it's funny. I think I don't remember if us talking about it, but Donovan and I definitely talked about last year. That was a guy who was a 5-star recruit. He was given the keys to the LSU kingdom and did nothing with it. And then the guy that was lesser recruited and younger outshined him. You know, I don't care that he was the leading tackler of the SEC. I was still a little bit shocked by that. But I guess that brings us to the draft. The Browns are sitting at number 26, so it's a little bit harder to project what they're going to do. Also, it's a good thing, I think. There's a yes. couple guys. Yeah. There's a couple guys in my mind that I think would be good fits. But where do you sit? What are some of your dream scenarios?
So I would like I want defense. I don't think there's an offensive – need that's worth it. Maybe if you can get a speed wide receiver and you're making some other moves along the way, then maybe it makes sense. But the depth of this wide receiver class, you don't really have to force that there. So if you can get a guy who can come in right away and rush the passer or start at outside cornerback opposite Denzel Ward, because I'm not a believer in Greedy Williams. I would love for him to come back. I am not trusting a guy with that injury history. And the limited production that he showed in his rookie season. You can bring him back, but I do not want to rely on him being your number two cornerback. I want somebody else out there. And Terrence Mitchell's a free agent. You got to replace that. Kevin Johnson's a free agent. Kind of, I'm lukewarm on him coming back or not. So you need cornerback help. That's a first round talent if you can get one there, or a pass rusher guy like Aziz for I can't say his name, Olujari. From Georgia would be a great fit. A guy like Zaven Collins, a guy who can play as that edge, the Olivier Vernon role, where he can play the way Olivier Vernon did when he was younger before the injuries piled up, where he was a guy who was a 4-3 edge, 3-4 outside linebacker, a guy who could play as an off-ball linebacker at times, but also go and get you, you know, 8 to 12 sacks as a complimentary pass rusher. I think he's a perfect fit for that. Zaven Collins out of Tulsa fits that role very well. So those are the two guys that I have keyed on. At cornerback, man, there's so much variety in this class, and nobody like really stands out. A guy like Jace Horn from South Carolina, Joe Horn's son, productive, but man, he gambles a lot. He gives up plays, and when you're this Browns team and I figure that this team is going to be playing from ahead. You kind of want a guy who's a little bit more secure than that. You don't necessarily need the guy who's going to, you know, get you 5 interceptions, but also give up, you know, 8 touchdowns. I'd rather have a guy that gets you 2 picks, but gives up 2 touchdowns. And I think that more conservative, especially when you got a guy like a playmaker like Ward on the other side, and like what you're getting in Grant Delpit coming back as a playmaking safety. I think he's a great. So I like the idea of the more steady runner number two cornerback out there. And I think he's not the best fit at that. I mean, Patrick Surtain is probably going to be gone. He'd be fantastic. That's where I'm looking at.
Can I ask you about, I saw this today. I don't want to interrupt you guys at all, but
no, go ahead.
I think Patrick Surtain, to me, is kind of by far the best cornerback. Is there any way the Browns would trade up for him at all? Imagine having Surtain and Denzel Ward, right, on that team. Yeah. I think that's
so. The thing with Surtain is
Super Bowl. That's a Super Bowl move.
Surtain is a lot like his dad in that he's always in the right spot. You watch his film, and he's never getting beat. He doesn't always make the play, but it's really tough to throw against him. That, you know, he's a he's a very, very talented cornerback. He's not, I don't think he's an NFL elite cornerback, but he's going to be really, really good. Very high floor guy. And when you're the Browns, I think a high floor is more important than a high ceiling at this point. You've got high ceiling players now. Now you've got to round that roster out so you don't have the gaps. So you're not playing Anderson Dejo. So you're not relying on Robert Jackson starting a playoff game for you at cornerback. You gotta fill that hole in. So if the deal's there, that's tempting, man. You have to move up pretty high for that, though. You're gonna have to move up to 10, 12, top 15.
Move up a little bit for that, and I also saw Rodarius Williams, excuse me, Greedy Williams.
Yeah, Greedy's brother.
I saw him mock to the Browns in the second round. That'd be kind of fun, I guess. I don't know.
In the second round?
That's a little rich for Rodarius. He's
third or fourth,
I think. Yeah, I would put him in the third round. I wouldn't be object to that. I think he's a little to my point that I was just making, he's a more steady player. I think Greedy was the better playmaker of the family, but also Rodarius has some. Watching him turn and flip his hips and turn and run is not impressive.
Bill was saying that last night. Bill Carroll, he was like, "Yeah, watching him."
Bill, you talked to my guy Bill. I love.
Yeah,
Bill.
You guys have the same birthday. Apparently,
we do. We are very, very good friends. I love Bill to death. I spent a day. When was that? Like 5 years ago. Me and Bill Carroll and Justin Higdon spent a day at a bar in Chicago watching college football from 11 a.m. to 1 a.m.
That's amazing.
Nonstop. It was so much fun. It was one of my favorite days of my life.
Wish I'd be on the phone. I would have learned so much from that conversation from you.
Bill didn't only provide scouting reports for the guys you were watching, but also their fathers and their cousins as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, as you know, Bill and I do share a birthday. He's not much older than me. I won't tell you how old he is, but he is not old enough to remember players from the 1950s like he does. It's encyclopedic wild knowledge. Like I like to think I'm a pretty bright guy and have a good memory. He's unbelievable at what he knows about players that came and played when he was a baby. It's crazy to me.
Yeah, I don't know how he does that. He's told me so much Packers history. I don't even know about from like the 50s and 60s. I'm like, how do you know this stuff,
dude? He just does, man.
Steelers fan. Sadie. Sorry to say that on here, but
no one has changed the way I do like my scouting. I'm using air quotes because it's not like I'm an actual scout, but no one has changed the way I go about it more than, I mean, obviously you, Jeff, because I've been with you for 10 years at this point, but Bill in the last couple of years, because I mean, at first when I first talked to Bill, he was talking about all these small school guys, and it was like, come on, man, you can't really think that these guys are all going to get drafted. But then as you're listening to the details and the nuances and what he's talking about with the production, he knows what he's talking about. And if you listen to what he's got to say and the details within it, it's like, damn, that's applicable there. It's pretty crazy. I give him credit there.
Oh yeah. He's great. You know, we all have our misses, but he's really good at finding the small school guys. Cause that's what he was. He was a small and a defensive back. He knows defensive backs. He has pointed out several guys that, and he has, so you know, this Josh from working with me for a long time. My draft thing, my draft gift is I can tell you who can't play better than I can tell you who's going to be great.
That's a big deal.
It is.
That's the whole thing. That's a big
deal. I like that. That's sort of my Spidey sense. Now I missed on it with Josh Allen. I'll fess up to that. I'm good with that. But I took so much crap for not liking Laquon Treadwell and not liking Christian Hackenberg back in the day, even before it became trendy to not like him. Hakeem Butler. I'm like, this guy's undraftable watching his film, and people were going crazy for him. I'm like, why? You know, so my gift is being able to see guys that can't play. Bill's good at that too. He and I will share observations behind the scenes. Like, yeah, that guy's, you know, he's going to go in the top 50 and he should be a UDFA. We have those conversations yearly and we are right a hell of a lot more than we're wrong.
He is good. The player he got me the most on was, there's two. One of them doesn't count because it's Johnny, but that's a different story. But all the off the field stuff. But no, Dorial Green Beckham, like that was the one. Being Bill's, like he'll be like, "I told you so, dude. I told you so. I knew it was gonna work." Like no disrespect to the young man, But I was like, no, Dorial Green Beckham be fine, dude. He's gonna be a top.
Yeah, Justin Hunter is another one where he and I were both on against the grain on where like we just don't like this guy.
Yeah. Since I've been writing for you, the list of wide receivers that you have not liked or that you've said that's not that guy's gonna suck is so very low. I think that's probably the one position where it sticks out. There's probably a guy every year where it's like, yeah, Jeff didn't like that guy, and I thought he was gonna be good.
Yeah. I'm not far enough into the process this year, and I should be because the other team I cover, the Lions, don't have any wide receivers. Their wide receiver room right now is Quintez Cephas and Geronimo Allison. That's it. But I need to get brushed up on some wide receivers, but I'm not there yet.
So we got some people messaging us. So they're asking who are we taking at 26? And you answered it with the edge. You'd like to see the edge from Georgia. Olajuwon?
Yeah. Ojulari.
Yeah. And then Zaven Collins. I like Zaven Collins a lot more because tell me if this is stupid. He's dominant. When I watch him, he dominates the game. He dominated Oklahoma State. He dominated Tulane. He dominated USF. There was another shitty AAF schooler, AAC school that he dominated. AAC. Yeah, I'm sorry, AAC, yeah. There was another that he absolutely dominated. You know, he had two picks that were turned back for touchdowns. He had like three sacks against Oklahoma State. He just dominates the game. But is that a silly reason to pick him over the guy from Georgia because the guy from Georgia is playing the SEC? Does that make sense?
No, I get that. You want more proven production. You want guys who have done it. He is not the athlete that Olajuwon is. He doesn't have the twitch. He doesn't lack twitch. This isn't Quentin Copels out there, another guy that I told you was going to bust because he didn't have any twitch at all. Don't take edge rushers that don't have any twitch. He has some twitch, but he's not a guy. He's not the fluid athlete. If you watch him, his hips are a little tight. His ankles are a little tight. This is a guy who's I compare him to a guy like Ryan Kerrigan. A guy who's going to be a really good player, but not an elite player. And he'll bubble up for a Pro Bowl year here and there, but he's not going to be you're not getting J.J. Watt. You're not getting Myles Garrett.
Right.
You're not getting that kind of guy. You're getting a guy like Preston Smith, that caliber of player, Ryan Kerrigan. That's the ilk that you're getting there, and that's fine. The Browns need that. And his ability to play that Olivier Vernon role where he can get out and blow up a screen pass because he's going to see it because he's a smart guy. So he does give you a little bit more of that. Early on, Olajuwon, he's a pass rusher. He's going to pin his ears back and go get the quarterback, and that's pretty much all he really offers. Now, he's probably better at that than Collins, but if you can sacrifice a little bit of that to get the overall game, I think you're going to like Collins better.
Yeah, and I feel like with this class, don't you think there's more pure pass rushers that you could get perhaps later on? I hate to keep going back to the A whatever it was, but
AAF, AAC, AAF was a different league.
Tulane, Patrick Johnson on the edge. That's another pure. You know, there's a couple guys that to me are you know, Quiddy Pay is going to be gone, but there's a couple other
guys. Yes, he will. Quiddy Pay will be gone.
Yeah, but there's a couple other pure pass rushers that I could see maybe being in the picture early, there in the second round, rather than a guy that has that complete. I don't know. Zaven Collins just feels like he does so much. But again, I mean, I'm talking about he's guarding running backs from Tulane man to man, and am I putting too much stock in that because they're running backs
a little bit? Yeah, it is different than covering the guys from Alabama or Florida or even Tennessee. Tennessee's right. Had some really good skill players that. Just haven't worked out because their quarterbacks stink and their coaches stink. You know that, yeah. You have to factor that in. I'm a Mac guy, so I look through the prism. I'm an Ohio Bobcat, so when I watched like a guy like Poppy White, to go real obscure here, dominated in the Mac, but he was a 5'9" hybrid running back wide receiver that didn't really have a role in the NFL. So even though he dominated in the Mac, Dwayne Eskridge is a guy like that this year from Western Michigan, right here in my backyard. Phenomenal quickness, and I love the guy. He's going to be a second round pick, and I wouldn't mind seeing him in Cleveland, but there are some drawbacks with him. He did it against he has never played against an NFL cornerback, against a guy who's going to play in the NFL, other than a guy who might sneak onto a practice squad for 2 weeks. He's never had that competition. He's done it in a league where the emphasis is on what he does well, which is catch the ball and turn and run and beat people with your quickness and speed. That's not going to work as well. It's kind of a Deebo Samuel style, but he's not that big and not that physical. So that kind of guy, also he's 24, which hurts his upside. I know there's a lot of people that bristle at the age. I don't care about that as much, except for when you get to that second contract. Hopefully he proves worthy enough to get to that second contract. I'll worry about that when I get to it. But yeah, that kind of guy, that's the kind of wide receiver that I'm actually looking for in Cleveland, is a guy who can win in the middle of the field, a guy like Eskridge, a guy like Amari Rodgers out of Clemson. What's his name from Ole Miss? Help me out there.
Elijah Moore.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that kind of guy I think would fit very well in this offense as your inside guy, your guy that's, you know, running digs and crosses and things like that. That's that and can make things happen after the catch. You know, he can catch a pass, a hook pass on third and six. He can catch it at 4 yards and still get the first down. I think that's where this Browns offense really needs a wide receiver going forward. And you don't have to get that in the first round. You can get that with any of those. There's a lot of guys like that this year. Yeah. But the level of competition does matter. You know, if you're going to compare Eskridge to Moore, Moore's done it against guys that are going to be starting in the NFL. And that does have to mean something. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. You know, and it's funny, too, because bringing up a wide receiver is another smaller school guy that I've kind of fallen in love with wide receiver-wise is Austin Watkins. You know, he checks out 6'2", all that stuff. But again, as you said, if I'm looking at the scope of what he's played against, he's probably played against 2 or 3 guys that are going to be in the NFL. But another wide receiver that I kind of been watching out. What do you think about Austin Watkins? And I want to ask you about another wide receiver, Wop Fillior out of Indiana. That's a guy that I kind of thought would be an interesting gadget kind of guy that the Browns. I feel like the Browns utilized a lot of. At least it felt this way. They tried to do a lot of gadget type stuff, and Jarvis Landry was the gadget guy. And I think that he doesn't have the athleticism to be the gadget guy. So I think
I'd agree with that. Other than him throwing the ball, he's not a guy that you want running the jet sweep. You want a guy with a little bit more dynamic athleticism. Yeah, Fylor is a good candidate for that. He did that. Actually, Eskridge could do that for you. That kind of guy, and that also can factor into the kick return. I actually wouldn't mind seeing them give D'Ernest Johnson a little bit of a shot at that. I think he's got the open field skills to do that sort of thing, you know, and he's a good enough. You could actually, I wish they would do this. So this is one of my wishes that I hope Kevin Stefanski realizes. I want Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb in the game together. And I want Hunt to be the chess piece. If they're, you know, in a shallow package, you run and you put them both in the backfield and make the defense figure out who it's going to go to. If they're, you know, loaded up to stop the box, you flex out Hunt, put him in the slot and use him as a receiver or use him on something like that. I wish they would do more of that. That's one of my goals for this next year is that they make that happen. I think that would help a lot. I think that would help make the offense more unpredictable and the defense more off balance. And I like that because I think that's where Baker really thrives is when he's one of those guys, when he's got the defense, you know, wondering, man, he knocks them out. So yeah. that's playing to the strengths of your quarterback. And that's how you win.
I agree with that. Donovan, did you have any other questions about the early round before I ask questions about the middle tier?
No, I think we got, covered. I was looking at what we did, what you did on the mock draft that I did for sports and everything. I mean, that was a little different. It's a lot of different guys drafting, but I think you did a good job with Cleveland so far.
He asked me to do a 7-round mock draft basically, and I have like 30 guys ranked. I felt like it was unfair, but that's fine.
Hey, Bill said he was 250 deep. Just saying.
Yeah, he was 250 deep in August.
Yes, he is.
Well, so we had Eric Robinson and Chris Ransom from Draft Utopia. They were at the Senior Bowl though, so they had a little heads up on us. And so was Luke Owens and then Kyle Krabs, the best hair in the business.
Kyle's a very good friend of mine, so I love him.
Yeah, I do too, man. He's great, but he's, you know, baby and stuff. So
I believe he's got his work cut out for him.
Yeah, he does. No, you did good, John. No, I was just gonna say
who did I take with the Browns? Because I don't even remember. Jeremiah Owusu, right?
Yeah,
JOK. So yes. He's another guy that I would love because he is your off ball linebacker, hybrid safety type of guy. He's a playmaker. He tackles, man. Every tackle that you saw Andrew Sendejo run past, JOK is getting their ass on the ground. So that certainly adds some value there. You know, I don't want to disrespect Andrew Sendejo too much because he was playing much higher up the depth chart than he was supposed to be. He was supposed to be your number four safety, and he wound up being your number one for half the year. Yeah. That's not his fault.
No.
And he did, to his credit, he did play very well against Pittsburgh in both of the last two times. But you got to be better than that if you're going to win playoff games. You can't. That kind of guy can't start for you anymore.
No. But again, like you said, that wasn't really the plan. I felt like he played better off later on because they were starting to use Sheldrick Redwine a little bit more, and that was reducing the snaps. And I felt
you saw Ronnie Harrison step up. I hope he's back in an expanded role. I think Carl Joseph, once he got healthy and finally figured out where he fit. I wouldn't be opposed to bringing him back. And if you got that, then you've got your safeties because you got Delpa coming back. You got your top three safeties there. Redwine's back. You're okay there. Yeah. So I'm all right with that. But then you've got to add a cover linebacker that's better than Jacob Phillips or Mac Wilson. And
Malcolm Smith, man.
Pass.
Josh is like, why do you like Malcolm?
No, he played. He's been a constant topic on this podcast.
I like him.
He did what he needed to do. He's a sub package linebacker. And
yeah, you don't want him starting. Like, I'm still stuck on old Malcolm Smith, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
God, he wasn't even good back then. He's
the MVP.
He did win the Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah,
he has a knack for making plays. He made that great interception this year, too. But
I know. I'm still living on that.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I'm also a USC fan.
That'll do it. That's true.
Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll likes him. I like him.
Yeah, there you go.
Except the last guy, the old lineman, that guy. He's not cool.
Chad Wheeler?
Chad Wheeler. Yeah. That dude used to go away forever.
Sorry. Way to bring the pod down, Donovan.
Yeah, no.
Sorry.
Just be thankful.
I said I let every USC player. Well, not him. That's what I meant.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So if you're friendly with the USC guys, can you get Brian Cushing to not, you know, have an open death threat on me?
Wait, what?
that's an exaggeration. But Brian Cushing and I are not simpatico from his days at USC and in the draft and in Houston. I like to think of myself as a fairly anonymous face when I'm at training camp, and I was at Houston Texans training camp. I lived there for a few years, and he let me know that he knew who I was and that I had written negative things about him, and so I'm a big dude.
Yeah, I'm
6'5", 230. Okay. So I'm not a small human being, but he looked like he could snap me like a twig, and you know, with his man juice and running in excesses as he said it. I'm a little concerned. And now he's away now. He's
on the staff.
He's doing his thing now. So I'm not the biggest Brian Cushing fan in the world, nor is he a fan of mine.
Okay, well, if I ever run into Cush, that's what they call him thing in L.A.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Well, you know what's funny? I had Porter Gustin on the podcast when he got drafted, before he got drafted on the other podcast, and he was saying one of the guys he used to work out with all the time back in back in L.A. was Cushing, because he worked out there a lot.
It shows, man. Gustin's
Porter's clean, though. He's not Andrewson.
I hope so. He looks great. He really does.
I like him too. I was gonna say. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I do too.
He's not a starter, really. He's like a role player for sure.
If he's your number four defensive end, you're great. And I think he embraces that role. I think he eats it pretty well. He can make plays. He's limited. He's kind of stiff in the hips, but again, if he's a sub package pass rusher, he allows you to go into a NASCAR package where you can kick your end inside.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, no, I mean, there's a few guys really for just going off the top of my head, USC guys that could fit what the Browns do. Now, not all of them. I like Elijah Griffin in day three for them. Isaac Stewart Taylor in day three, a cornerback help.
I like him.
Hufanga at safety is a good playmaker there for them, I think. Tyler Vaughns, who I know Josh is a big fan of as well.
Yeah.
Amar Ross, St. Brown, guys like that could be help for.
Well, St. Brown's interesting to me. I don't know what to do with him.
Really?
Because to me, he seems like a diet Rashard Higgins, and I'd rather just have Higgins.
A diet. I like the Higgins.
I can see diet. That.
I don't think he's as high end as what Hollywood is.
Yeah, I could see that.
That's fair. Do you like Bonds better?
Tyler Bonds? I haven't watched a lot of him, to be honest with you. From what I saw, so I watched the UCLA game, fresh in my mind because I watched that not too long ago. I love them both wearing the home uniforms.
Yeah,
that needs to happen more.
Yes,
when you got the contrasting colors like that, that definitely needs to happen more. So I'm not real well versed on him yet. I'm behind on where I want to be in draft because I had to cover the Lions blowing their organization up. So I haven't had the I do too. It needed to happen. But I'm behind where I normally am on guys beyond like the top 50. Right. So okay. Yeah. That UCLA game, it reminds me that another guy that I like in that edge role, not in the first round, but a guy who shined in Mobile was Osa Odoziguwa, is a guy who I think could play that second defensive end role really nice. And he probably played his way into the second round, and he might actually be gone by the time the Browns pick in the second. But that's another guy that you would consider in that role for the Browns in the draft.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have him on the team.
You're not going to hate on him because he's UCLA?
No. They got some guys over there.
Yeah, they do.
They got some guys. They're a young team. I like, with the guy. I'm not giving too much credit, but.
No. Let me ask you about Slovis, because I'm already getting stuff on the Lions end. Like, who's the quarterbacks in 2022? And I haven't watched him critically yet from like an NFL perspective. So I want to get an early jump from somebody that I know that I trust.
Yeah, man, I've watched every snap he has taken. So, I mean, so the Lions to pick high, they're probably going to be picking in the top 10, I would say, next year. You would say
yes. Right? Yes. You will not insult any Lions fan by telling them the team's going to stink next year.
I don't know if Keaton's going to be – I think Keaton could be in that top 10, but he's not going to be like the Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields that high. Even when Zach Wilson played Keaton last year, this past year, but the year before, Zach outplayed him then, and Zach wasn't a household name. Obviously, Keaton was a true freshman, but I think Keaton's going to be in that kind of like mid to late first round range just because of his like body to body type. But he does have the arm, and his the way he places the ball is great. But I think JT is a little bit better at Georgia. And obviously, they were together. I think JT's a little bit better. Yeah. I think Sam's a little bit better. I like Keaton a little bit more than Ritter. Those are all that's considered the top quarterbacks, I guess, for next year. And there's a few others I'm leaving out. But
the kid from Arizona State, Daniels.
Jaden's good too. But I mean, yeah, Keaton's outplayed him twice for sure. Jaden's got a long way to go as a passer. He's an amazing athlete, though. If he can put it together, throwing the ball.
Well, he also doesn't have the receivers that you do at USC either.
He doesn't. And
I've seen quite a few drops there.
Keaton had, I mean, USC, that's the one thing they always have is great receivers. Yeah. So it's kind of hard to tell. I mean, I was saying last year, Tyler Vaughns, Amara St. Brown, Drake London, just so many guys to throw the ball to. So, but I like Keaton, though. He's came a long way, really. You got to keep in mind, too, Kurt Warner was his high school coach out in Arizona. So he's had NFL coaching a little bit.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I'm learning things tonight. Warner thank you. His,
that Cade Warner was. I'm a high school football guy. You know that,
I know that. Yes.
So I mean, that's just I like Keaton a lot. But yeah, the Lions fans should keep him on the radar and look out for him. But they should be going. I would say Howell right now is the QB1, so that's the guy that you're really looking at because the Lions are probably picking the top 5. I was trying to be nice, say top 10.
I think he knows. I think he knows that they're gonna suck.
I mean,
we're having that debate now about like. Because
I like golf.
See, and I don't want to sidetrack it with the Lions thing, but I don't know what to do with that. Like, I think Jared Goff is starting all 16 games for Detroit this year, and I don't know how it's going to go. I'm cautiously optimistic that the guy who was really good before McVay dialed things back on him. And that goes to the importance of having your quarterback and your head coach on the same plane to go back to what we were talking about with Baker. You see the symbiosis of thought between Baker Mayfield and Kevin Stefanski that wasn't there with another own number one pick, Jared Goff, and a very good, dynamic, young offensive coach in Sean McVay. I don't see that happening in Cleveland. That's one of the reasons why I am bullish on getting Baker locked up. But yeah, when a guy loses his confidence like that, and you see it with Wentz too, you know, how much of it was the coach, how much of it was the guy How much of it was the scheme? How much of it was the fact that their offensive line fell off a freaking cliff, especially when Andrew Whitworth got hurt? You know, I don't know what to do. So I'm willing to give Jared Goff the benefit of the doubt and let him start this year and see what happens out of it. And if he plays his way in, and if you know he's really good, and the Lions somehow freakishly bubble up to 7 or 8 wins, then I don't know. Yeah, I'm good with that.
I didn't think he finished the season that bad. Donovan, I bet against him pretty much on a weekly basis towards the end of the season, and that bit me in the ass. I didn't think he was that. He looked good. I mean, he looked like a guy that they didn't want. You could tell that they didn't want him out there, and it feels like he exceeded expectations. I feel like with that kind of level of, that's all you can really expect from the guy. I think
he needs. He just has to have a team that's built around. They want the guy that quarterback that, hey, I will throw you 40 passes, win the ball game, the game winning drive. I don't trust Goff to throw that many passes. I don't trust him on a game winning drive, really. So I think that's what McVay wants. He's not bad. I always say he's not. No, he throws a pretty ball. He's not bad. He's good. I like it. For one, high character, like top notch characters. What is he bringing to Motor City, man? It kind of reminds me of Blake Griffin, like when he got traded from the Clips
to the Pistons.
Kind of like he's not as good as he's supposed to be, but he's still good. Like I don't know. Like Blake's putting up numbers.
I hadn't thought. I'm mentally taking notes here to write that down. That's it. That's actually a really good analogy, man.
I mean, I feel like Blake's gonna put up his numbers, like what he's doing. But it's like he's not winning the Pistons anything. I feel like Goff's the same. He's gonna probably put up the same numbers in the Rams, but they're not gonna. He's 4-12, 5-11.
He's not gonna be the reason why you win, but he will help you.
Stopgap quarterback.
Yeah.
He's still 25 years old. Yeah. So.
I thought he was so good at Cal. He had that one game against Utah. I guess that pretty much encapsulates his career, where he threw like 3 interceptions. But I remember he threw that dime on the sideline where it was just like 60 yards down the field. And I was like, damn, that guy's good. But if you look at the box score, it was just like, oh, he wasn't good at all. But I don't know. I liked him.
He's a downgrade from Stafford is the easiest way to look at it. And But Stafford wasn't winning, so it was time to change. That's my official position on it. For all you Lions interlopers that are watching right now.
Sam Howell's going to Detroit calling right now. I don't know. His diet's weird, though. We got to get him some better food.
He only eats like 2 foods, right?
Yeah.
What are the foods?
He's weird, dude.
He eats chicken and
like spinach or something.
Yeah.
Like green. Yeah. It's unseasoned chicken. It's just like
He doesn't want spices soiling his chicken.
Yeah, it's like
that's Marinovich diet, right? That's RoboQB.
Oh man, Powell's crazy, man.
That guy ended up being great. He was all drugged out and still won a championship. It was an AFL championship. It still counts.
Someone's like, he eats boiled unseasoned chicken, spinach, and reads the Bible every day. That's Sam Howell.
That's a different cat.
That's the exact opposite of Dwayne Haskins, who goes to the strip club every day.
No, Howell's not going to be at the strip club at all. He's already engaged.
Good for him.
Yeah, he's a stand-up guy. Sam.
I mean, I suppose.
He's a pretty dang good quarterback, too, from what I've seen at North Carolina.
I like Sam. Man. I don't know if he's like – can I ask you guys a quick question? I know we're like running out of time. But like, if Sam Howell – where does he compare to like – this quarterback class, like if you threw him in this quarterback class,
already okay. So for me,
because I think the drop off for the next year's quarterback class,
he would be. I like Lawrence is number one. I like Justin Fields. I like his chances in the NFL. I think he would be number two. I would probably put Howell. I'm not sold on Zach Wilson yet.
Ooh, hot take.
I don't like him, but I don't. I haven't seen the magic yet. Now, I haven't watched a lot of his games. I watched San Diego State. I watched like 2 other games too. But the San Diego State one stands out in my mind because that was the last one I watched. And he left some plays on the field there that he if you're picking a guy number 2, number 3 overall, you can't be leaving. So I'm not there yet with him. I get the enamoration with him. I don't see it with Trey Lance. So I watched those games, the North Dakota State playoff run in 2019. I watched those in real time. That was the last time I saw him other than the game that I watched this year. So I have to go back and rewatch it more critically. But what he did against like James Madison was ridiculously good. I got the Deshaun Watson comparisons. I really did. But, man, his game that he played last year. Now I know it was very weird circumstances.
The one game.
It was like I was watching a bad version of Deshaun Kizer, and I can't get that out of my head. I mean, it was bad. I mean, he's throwing across his hips. You know, you want to see good fundamentals always. That's one of the things that you look for. Repetitive traits, consistency of performance, and his throwing platform and his mechanics were different on different throws. That bothered me a lot because that tells me that either he was rusty and wasn't getting coached, and you know how much rust are you going to have to kick off when he's played one game in 2 years when you're drafting him in the top 10 this year. So I'm a little gun shy on that. And then Mac Jones to me, I watch him and I see a less good looking Brady Quinn, and that's
we're gonna
He's lucky.
I don't like that.
Nobody's as good looking. Brady Quinn is the most beautiful human being I've ever seen, aside from my wife. He's just breathtakingly gorgeous. But
that's why the photo is not wearing a helmet.
I gotta go, Tom.
Gotta see that face,
Tom Brady, man.
Tom's pretty good looking man too.
43. Is he 43, 44?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not the beefcake Brady Quinn was, Donovan.
Have you seen that Zach Wilson smile though, man? I mean, you're underestimating. He's got that smile, man. No, I like Zach. That's fair, though. I could see that. You know, people putting him at 2 and 3. I could see that. I like Zach a lot.
I think he's going to go that high.
He's improved a lot. I think he.
Do you like Fields better or do you like Wilson better?
I like Justin better, but I think it's close. I see why people are putting him up there.
I don't think it's close.
You don't think it's close? I thought you liked Zach a lot, Josh.
No, I have seen nothing to make me. I've seen nothing to make me hate him, but at the same, I see what Jeff's saying. He's not really even like the focal point of the offense. The focal point, I mean, even when you watch that Navy game from the get-go, the snap of the first season, the offensive line was just pile driving the front seven of the entire defense. And that was kind of their
Brady Christensen, baby.
that was kind of their game script for the entire season.
So I'm trying to charge my phone, guys.
And those wide receivers he was working with at BYU weren't bad either. They weren't like Alabama, but they weren't playing Alabama. They were playing Coastal Carolina, San Diego State. So he's dishing it to guys. He was basically throwing it to five crappy Julian Edelmans, and it worked out really well.
I think he's had the biggest jump just from
He definitely made a jump skill wise in terms of how fast he's processing the defense. You can see his clock sped up. And that's a good thing in that case. So that's a very impressive thing. And if that continues, he's certainly going to be good.
I like Mac a lot, man.
I really do.
I'm a big Mac. I mean, I've been a Mac, and he really down in Mobile apparently did his thing.
He can throw with touch better than anybody in this class, and that includes Lawrence.
It's beautiful, but he is better with touch than Lawrence.
But it's like watching Brady Quinn when he was at Notre Dame and they were playing, you know, Central Michigan, and the likes like that, where he's throwing to guys who are wide open. That's true.
Yeah.
And I don't think he has the athletic ability to extend plays when he's in trouble. I want to see what happens when he doesn't have five future starting offensive linemen standing in front of him. And you know, he's playing somebody better than Vanderbilt or Kentucky.
I just want to Tua didn't get this though. Like, he was doing the same
Tua thing. Tua had the athleticism and he had but they were younger and
Tua was small.
You know, Tua had rugs. He wasn't young.
Tua's tape was a little different, bro. It sparked.
I was not a big Tua guy.
Oh, really?
I don't understand why Tua's getting like so much love more than Mac, and Mac is doing the same. He's doing beating
now.
Mac,
see,
Mac Jones.
That's
is
fair.
Than Tua in college. Mac Jones is better. Get a better
it
season.
Be. It could be. Yeah, he probably did. That's fair. Now
all SEC schedule too.
Yeah.
Please.
I can't refute that. I'll just say that I'm not that high on him. I wouldn't take him before the middle of the second round if I'm an NFL team.
Okay, middle of the second round. I thought you were like
I don't even know if I take him.
Josh is ridiculous, Jeff.
No, I mean, I'm not saying I don't. It's the same. If I'm gonna take a quarterback, I want someone who's at least had one game where they put the team on their back. Like Justin Fields, he was playing with no offensive linemen, none of his starting offensive linemen, a three freshmen, a wide receiver. I was like, oh damn. That dude's the dude. Like he proved that's
Indiana game.
watch the second half of the Georgia game for Mac Jones though, because
he's capable of doing some things that
I'm not
that
saying
some
he put
guys
the team,
can't
yeah.
do.
He didn't put the team on his back. I'm not saying that, but if you watch the second half of that Georgia, remember they're losing at halftime. They couldn't run the ball that well.
That's true.
And all that Senior Bowl talk, didn't they say the same about EJ Manuel?
EJ Manuel was EJ Manuel happened to be in the right place at the right time. He was the best prospect in a year where there weren't prospects, and that bubbled him up. Isn't it nice that the Browns don't need a quarterback? We're talking about this. It's like we don't have to worry, but the Browns like have to choose between one of these lesser evils. Isn't that great?
back to the Browns. Who are some deep sleepers we can look at?
Deep sleepers. Okay, so I'm not that versed on these guys yet. I'll just give you some guys that I have seen. I'm going to butcher his name, so I actually wrote it down here. Josh Imatorbebe from Illinois is a wide receiver that I like. Got kind of a Hollywood Higgins kind of guy. I think he's got a little bit more spunk to him, but he's a little bit inconsistent. Didn't have the best quarterback play. So I'm looking at him. I'm trying to think who else. I had a list, and I don't see where that is. Like day three, I wouldn't mind without knowing the players where I'm looking for the Browns. Day three, I want an interior offensive lineman. The way they got Nick Harris last year, I want another guy like that. I think you keep loading up on those guys, cycle them through. You prove this year that you can never have too many of those guys. Maybe they found one in Blake Hance. I don't know. Maybe they have one. Michael Dunn was okay before he got hurt, you know. But I want that pipeline to keep coming. I want a backup tackle later in the draft. And I have no idea who those guys are yet.
Brady
Christensen, man. There you go.
Brady Christensen would be great. Yeah. He's not the most mobile guy. I'm not sure he's the best scheme fit, but he's an NFL player for me for sure.
Would a guy like Alaric Jackson from Iowa be someone that – that was someone that always sticks out in my mind because he played left tackle, blah, blah, blah.
I just wish that his first move wasn't popping up. You can't do that when you're an offensive step. Greg Robinson did that. His first move, instead of shuffling back, was always he'd creep up in the stance as he went back. Jackson does that. That bugs me. That doesn't portend well.
Okay, that makes sense. I think that we talked about a couple linemen on Donovan's podcast yesterday. The giant kid from Minnesota, he might be in that.
Yeah. I like him. I mean, I like him, but he's raw, dude. Like, he's got a long way to go.
Yes, but he's giant.
6'9", 388 pounds.
Yeah.
Wow. He's massive. So I actually saw him play in person, and he looks bigger in person than he does.
Really?
Yeah. That was 2 years ago I saw him. So, yeah, he's a big dude. I remember one of the guys that I was thinking about, Derek Barnes from Purdue, to stick to the Midwest area. Linebacker, not a dynamic guy, but a guy that I think can play in the NFL in a sub package. He has some cover skills. He can pass rush a little bit. This is a fifth, sixth round type of guy. But that's if you're getting JOK in the first round or you're missing on that and you're going to wait on getting your off-ball linebacker, a guy who can do a few different things. I want a guy to compete with Mack Wilson for Mack Wilson's job because I don't think Mack Wilson has done very good, quite honestly. I wish he was better because I like him personally. I really do. But dude's got to be better to earn a spot back. You know, that's one of the things that Browns fans are going to have to recalibrate is that we've had guys like – Josh, you know this. I was a massive Breann Body Calhoun fan, probably his biggest fan on the face of the earth. I loved the guy when he was at Minnesota. I loved him when he came to Cleveland. He had that one magical year, and now he's bouncing around practice squads. And you know, as frustrating as it was to see him go, you understand that his caliber of player isn't going to help the Browns anymore. And a guy like Mack Wilson, if he's not producing at a level that he needs to. Yeah, it's nice that we like him. He had a phenomenal preseason in 2019, but you gotta give me more than that now. So, you know, this is the changing mindset for Browns fans that we all have to get used to, is that he's, you know, guys like him, guys like Jordan Elliott, the rookie defensive tackle this year, they need to be on notice that they got to play better if they want to keep their job. Vincent Taylor outplayed him last year. You know, bring me Vincent Taylor back as your number three, number four interior defensive lineman. You know, those guys have to earn it. Greedy is like that. He's a second round pick, and he's a fun dude, and it's easy to like him, but he's got to earn that spot back. You know, you're not going to keep guys that you know are I'm trying to think of who would fit in that category. I don't want to use Joe Schobert because he was better than that, but just like a guy who lingered for a while because they just couldn't find anybody better, but he wasn't really that good. Guy like Derek Willis, a wide receiver, kind of fits that bill. I want players like that to be challenged for their roster spots by rookies coming in this year. I think that's where the Browns are at more than they're needing. You know, you have your basic starting lineup. You probably need a starting defensive tackle. I think Ogunjobi's going to go. You need an outside corner. You probably need one off-ball linebacker, and you might need that edge to replace Olivier Vernon, especially if Adrian Claiborne is washed. That's kind of it. The rest of it is you're building depth. You're building to replace guys when, you know, you're getting a wide receiver into the system for when Jarvis Landry is no longer on the roster. You know, will it be Donovan Peoples-Jones? Hopefully. But maybe you get somebody else in. That's the roster building point where they're at now. And that's very different from needing to get starters out of the fourth and fifth and sixth round. That they could draft a fifth rounder this year that doesn't make the team. And that's probably a good thing, because that tells you where the strength of the roster and how well this roster has been stocked by John Dorsey and now Andrew Berry making very prudent choices. That's my overarching draft plan, is that you're not necessarily trying to hit home runs anymore. You're trying to get guys that can contribute in one way or another and maybe, you know, push guys. And if it doesn't work, then you just made Mac Wilson a better player, and that's okay too. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Did you give John Dorsey a compliment?
Sort of. Okay, he drafted some good players. He missed some. I will not forgive Antonio Callaway. How do you draft that guy? He shows up with pot in his car when he lands on the plane. How do you keep that guy around? I don't get that. That bugged me. But he made some good moves too. You gotta give him credit for that.
I do agree with you there. I think the Browns fans are a little bit too harsh on the John Dorsey era.
You know, I've bagged on Greedy, so that's not a bad draft pick. Not a bad draft pick at all. Lions fans wanted that guy in the first round. He had that kind of buzz for a long time.
Yeah,
getting him in the second round, the fact that it hasn't worked doesn't make it a bad pick.
Yeah.
It was the right choice. It just didn't work. So I think that his willingness to make that type of move was a positive. You know, he was the right tonic for Sashi, just treating every player as a number. That didn't work. And only viewing everything as a commodity rather than as a football team. That didn't work. Now, it was right that he left that cache of picks that we're benefiting from now. But you got to use some of those picks at some point to get some football players. Give me football players, to quote John Dorsey.
Yeah, I feel like that. You know, you kind of hit on a little bit of a topic there. I feel like that you see on Twitter, the analytics guys go against like the football guys or whatever. I
think
the Browns now have a perfect complement. You can't treat everybody like a PFF number. You know, you have to be able to understand what role Jarvis Landry plays. At the same time, understanding he's limited in the offense, right? You know,
right.
You don't want to get rid of him. I don't want to get rid of him. A lot
I don't either. Do.
But, you know, I understand that maybe he's not the number one, right? And I feel like they have a pretty perfect compliment there.
I'll do a shameless plug for Browns Wire here since y'all are under my employ. I have a piece coming tomorrow on Browns who need to have their contracts restructured, and Jarvis Landry was number one with a bullet on that.
Yeah, I believe that.
I don't want him gone. I want him back. The Browns are better with Jarvis Landry on the team, but they'd be even better if he was making $8 million a year instead of 14.5.
Yeah, I don't know why people. I don't know why people insist on crapping all over him. It's very strange. I get he's not big. He's not bad.
I love the guy, and he's a good player. He's not a great player, but he's a really good player. Great teammate. Great ambassador for the team, for the city. He represents what I want the Cleveland Browns to be. On and off the field, he's going to go down for me. If he played earlier on, he'd be revered for what he is. The way Joe Hayden is, he's that kind of guy for me. That core, you know, like when he's gone, people are going to be talking about him. Like, oh man, remember the good old days of Jarvis Landry, how good he was, you know, how much we cheered for him. The way we talk about Webster Slaughter. I know he's a little bit before y'all's time, but that,
no, I'm familiar.
I think that's the way the juice needs to get viewed. And I hope that people can still see the positives with him, even though he is a little overpaid. That's not his fault.
Right. And at the time, people forget that at the time the Browns sucked, so they kind of had
at the time. We went to training camp in 2017, and I watched Kenny Britt and Corey Coleman, and God, who else was on? I don't even want to remember who was on that team catching balls from Cody Kessler and Kevin Hogan and Brock Osweiler. Oh my God,
Cody Kessler is one of my guys right there, man. Shout out Cody Kessler. All right, Tim.
I like Kevin Hogan better than Kessler.
I did too.
Really?
So yeah. So Cody Kessler blocked me on Twitter a long time ago because I compared him. I did a flow chart of USC quarterbacks as prospects, and I had I had like Leinart and Carson Palmer. I went back that far, and I got to where Kessler would be. I put clogged toilet, and then I drew a line diagonally down from that Cody Kessler. Oh, wow. And he got wind of that, and he didn't.
That's like funny. USC fans like kind of like always have a soft spot for him. Like they love him. He put up a lot of numbers there.
He was the right guy at the right time for that. Yeah. He was a good college quarterback. He was a terrible NFL.
Yeah, he's actually before Keaton Slovis. He's actually second USC all time.
I remember him being like the most efficient college passer ever, and everybody being all stoked about that.
Yeah, he is. He's the most.
That was 3 yards.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being a really good college quarterback as long as you realize that. When you're doing a college evaluation, like my guy Nathan O'Rourke at OU last year, phenomenal college quarterback, the best Ohio University football player in my lifetime, and I go back to OU for a long, long time. My mom even went there, and they stunk when she was there too. But he's not an NFL player, and I'm okay with that. People get too uppity when you know you see a good college player, but he doesn't have NFL traits, and it's not a disrespecting what they did in college. It's just merely pointing out that they're not the best NFL player, and I think that's something that a lot of people can't separate, especially when it's their school.
Yeah,
you know, I deal with that a lot with Michigan fans around here. I'm living in Michigan. I'm living in a house where my wife is the scion of Michigan people. When I say, I'm trying to think of who it was. Channing Stribling. Remember the skinny cornerback? He was like 6'3" and 165 pounds. And
Phenomenal in the spring league. Phenomenal.
Yes, he was. But I'm like, you know what? He was good in college, but how he won in college does not translate to the pros. And I try to tell that to my wife's family and the Michigan people around here, and they're like, oh, come on, you're full of shit. You know, you don't know what you're talking about. And I did, but it doesn't demean what he did at Michigan, though. You know, right. you got to separate the pros from the college. You cannot scout the helmet. The litmus thing that I always said. So Stanford players forever have gotten overrated. I know I'm going longer, so I'll wrap this up quick.
No, I love it.
Stanford players always get overrated. My litmus test is take the S off their helmet and put an I on it because it's the same damn uniforms as Indiana. Would you still feel the same way if that guy played at Indiana instead of Stanford? No, you probably wouldn't. That if you would feel that way, then yes, it's a legitimate thing. But if you don't, then stop putting Henry Anderson as the number 5 overall player on your freaking draft board because he's not. That's a very specific subtweet right there. if that dude went to Indiana, he would not have been a top 100 pick. Stanford has a lot of guys like that.
Solomon Thomas, like
JJ Arcega Whiteside. That guy's a 7th round pick if he's at Indiana.
Oh, that was somebody liked him a lot that we used to do a podcast with. Eric, he loved JJ Arcega Whiteside.
He was big and caught. I get the allure, but you are right.
Levine Toalolo was another one. Levine Toalolo was another. So I'll give one more example here. Levine Toalolo was an example of a guy that you have to have an awareness of size traits. The guy is 6'8", and everybody went crazy that he had 34-inch arms. Okay, I played volleyball. If you are 6'8" and you have 34-inch arms, that's like freaking T-Rex arms. That's like, that's short arms, man. It's 34. It's bigger than a guy, but if you put those on a guy that's 6'2", it's looking good. If you put it on a guy that's 6'8",
And who was this again?
Levine Tuilolo. Tight end who's bounced around and not done much at all. So when you see things like that, like you see a guy that's, you know, got 9 3/4-inch hands. Well, is he 6'3" and 310, or is he, you know, 6'8" 350? You know, that makes a difference. You gotta put that thing in perspective, you know, and that Stanford guys always get, like, Stanford and Louisville guys always have weird traits like that for whatever reason. Remember the safety from Louisville who picked off all Gerard Holloman picked off all those passes, but he was listed, I think, at 6'3", 215, and he got to the combine and he was like 5'11 3/4" and 198, and everybody's like, oh, all the air went out of that balloon.
He wasn't good enough to make the Arena Football League. He plays in the he played in the National Arena League. If anybody wants a Gerard Holloman follow up.
Well, I didn't even know.
Yeah.
If I ever want to know where these guys go, I always ask Keith, dude, because
he knows, man.
And I was watching because Greg Hardy. Greg Hardy was playing for, I don't know.
I thought he was UFC.
Greg Hardy.
I don't know.
You remember? He was doing both because the National Arena League don't pay very much, bro. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, those guys gotta get two jobs, bro. But yeah, Gerard Holloman, he was and Dexter McCluster, I believe they're on the same team, the Massachusetts Pirates. Yeah.
Wow. Josh, you know more about those obscure football leagues, like the Spring League.
Love it.
You have the market niche on that too. Every time you write about those guys, it does very well for the site.
How do you not work for those leagues, dude?
What'd you say?
I said, why don't you need to work for one of those leagues? They need to
seriously get you a PR, man.
It's a damn shame. You are right about the Stanford guys though, because my mind is reflecting back to like the linebackers too, like Chase Thomas and Shane Scott.
Oh my god,
those guys weren't drafted high, but every time someone took them, I remember being
Shane Scott was so stiff. And again, if he played at Indiana, he's not getting a draft sniff. But yeah. I had people telling me, "Oh my god, how do you not have him in the second round of your mock draft?"
Yeah.
Because I have eyes.
They did that, yeah. They did, yeah. Pretty. Yeah. I mean, there's some guys like Christian and Andrew that slipped through the cracks, but like most of them.
Well, those are transcendent talents, right there. Richard Sherman was actually underappreciated. You know, but guys like Anders Pete is another one. He's okay in the NFL.
I remember him. Yeah, I liked him.
Not, but he wasn't this, you know, phenomenal generational bookend talent that a lot of people made him out to be simply because he played at Stanford. Again, if he played at Indiana, you're looking at a guy who probably would have gone where he should have gone in like the second, you know, third round. He's a quality starter on a good football team.
Jeff is going to kill me for this one too. I was a big Kobe Fleener guy.
Okay. I don't hate that.
Okay. I like
he was somebody that I probably rated a little bit higher than I even passing the Stanford sniff test like that. I liked him. I liked him some. I did. Yeah. I liked him more than I liked Austin Hooper.
I could see that.
Hooper was a late bloomer.
Yeah. Damn, yeah. Stanford's got some good players in college that we just named off a lot of good players that I like.
David Shaw can recruit.
I mean, I'm a West Coast like, type of guy, so those. Are, I mean, I always respected Stanford because they always beat us, and they always play. USC was always way more athletic, but those guys just always played up to the level of competition. But NFL, you're right, a lot of them didn't work out for whatever reason. I don't know. I don't really know why, but they had NFL coaching, I guess, too. Shaw and Jim Harbaugh and stuff like that, but
well, I think you find
NFL type coaching. I mean, like the
system. Yes, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
Well, I think that the overrating the helmet thing happens. I mean, it happens a lot with Alabama. I mean, if you would ask me, hey, what program is overrated the most prospects? I would say Alabama, hands down, easy top of the list. I mean, you know, you could list 25 dudes on the top of your head that was drafted in the first three rounds that absolutely blew, and half of them be on the offensive line without even trying. I mean, Alabama guys are, you know.
Both Pro Bowlers in the NFL, though.
Quanjo Brothers.
I know they do. And that's always the argument, right? It's like, oh, they got the most Pro Bowl. Whatever. I don't care. You can still name. I know. And Pittsburgh has the most Hall of Famers. You know, I mean, what do you want me to do? But they still doesn't change the fact that there's still a million of them that bust out every year, and most of them it's due because they're so their bodies are so run down. A lot of it.
Well, I can't talk about bust, man. I'm an SC guy. We got a lot of them, so we don't want. I don't want to talk.
Man,
about
that. We'll save that for another show. I'll come on. We'll talk draft bust sometime. That'll be fun.
Ohio State's done pretty well. Y'all don't have too many. I mean,
I don't think there's a ton of Ohio State busts, but what makes Alabama different is that they bust out because either the body breaks down or they just can't play. When Ohio State guys bust out, it's usually because they're idiots. Eli Apple's a mama's boy. Dwayne Haskins goes to the strip club. There's usually some kind of mental barrier that they can't, you know what I mean? Or Mike Adams is just fat, right? He just had a weird body. Like that was there's always like something you can think about. Braxton's also got a weird
Braxton would run like 8 steps to go 2 yards. He was so enamored with his own footwork. It was crazy.
I love Braxton watching.
He was so much fun, and he was the most fun I've ever seen at the Senior Bowl too. He had sauce upon sauce, man. But dude, it didn't translate to the NFL. He got hurt a lot too. And I covered him when he was in Houston, and he just couldn't stay healthy, man. He was a guy he'd just get over like missing 3 weeks with a hamstring injury, and he'd pull the other one in like the second minute he was back in another practice. It just couldn't catch a break that way.
His diet was utter garbage. He had terrible, terrible. I got stories for days on Braxton Miller. Stories for days on
Braxton. We gotta get Braxton on the show.
That's good.
No.
Josh,
I don't know him that well. I don't need to get
that. I'm joking.
He was a great football player, but like you could identify that's what, you know, it's just whatever their issues were as a junior, and they were having a coach's meeting with the coach and they said, hey, you got to work on this. It was like those guys just said, no, I don't. It's the same issue. The only guy that I think that is a legitimate bust for the Buckeyes that I can't really remember, I don't really know why, is probably Raekwon McMillan. I felt like he was, I don't really know why he sucks or why he hasn't lived up to the hype. But even then,
I'll give you one going back a little bit more because it hurt me a lot. Bobby Carpenter was the guy that I whiffed on. I thought that guy was going to be phenomenal.
Bobby.
And it didn't work out for him.
Biggest mean just because, like, that's one of the best high school players I've ever seen in my life, dude.
Who?
Terrell Pryor.
Terrell Pryor, again, you can kind of identify. I mean,
you're right.
Positions around, and he got suspended late season. Bobby Carpenter's a weird one, maybe because he was too slow. I don't know.
He just didn't have the. I hate saying it because I still love the guy, but he's had me on his radio show several times, so I can't say anything bad about him.
He's great.
He's a good dude. But yeah, I swung and missed on him pretty badly. I had him. He was like a top 15 player on my board that year.
I believe it.
And he's also
a very good looking beefcake.
He is a good looking dude. Jim
Walker, Bobby Carpenter, who's better looking?
Who? Oh, Bobby Carpenter.
Yeah.
X for days. Wonderful jawline.
I like Plus,
when you talk to him, he makes you feel like he's your best friend. You're like, oh man.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, Bobby Carpenter's the best, dude. AJ Hawk's cool too.
Yeah, I like it.
Bobby Carpenter is the best.
Okay, that's cool to know. Who's a good player? I liked him. I was not doing what Jeff was doing back then. Obviously, I was in like high school, probably.
Yeah, I'm a little older than y'all. That's okay.
I know. I'm not trying to.
I mean, so I'll go back. The ultimate Ohio State bust is somebody from my childhood and one of my first Ohio State teachers. This was Arch Leister.
Oh my God.
going to the horseshoe and watching him play. We actually have a family friend who named their kid Art after Arch Leister, circa 1979.
I'm not familiar who that is.
Oh my God! Oh. You know who Arch Leister is?
I do. You need to go down that rabbit hole, my friend.
No, he has the greatest life. He lived the best life ever.
Really?
The best life. Oh yeah! Oh, the coolest dude in the world. Is he not?
What's his name?
It goes Arch Leister, Todd Marinovich. Those are the coolest guys in the world.
Arch Leister was the he wound up being
the number one overall pick.
Yeah, so he was the runner-up to the Heisman Trophy to Charles White from USC, to go back to the USC thing, in 1979, I want to say it was. They lost in the Rose Bowl that year. He was a great pro-style college quarterback at Ohio State, could do everything, phenomenal player. He had a massive, massive, massive gambling problem and wound up stealing checks, he was stealing drugs to sell them to pay his gambling debts. This was a guy who was like doing what Ryan Leaf did, but not to take the drugs, but to actually get money for gambling more. And he served time in prison for repassing bad checks.
Heard of him before, but I don't
know. Way higher class, though, too. Like, Ryan Leaf was dabbling in meth. Arch Leister was like, nah, he was like didn't he marry, like, the Wendy's woman?
And, yes,
like,
he did.
Half of her fortune.
Tom and then he like the...
Yes, dude. Yeah,
yeah,
and
then, yeah, and then, like the actual Wendy,
Wendy Thomas,
like that family. He's involved. I don't know if it was her or not, but he was involved in that family. Yeah,
and he was printing off like Super Bowl tickets.
Oh, I gotta read it.
I'm telling people he had connections. Oh yeah. Oh man, I guess I
they need to do a 30 for 30 on Arch Leister.
Griffin was the biggest bust because he's the only person who went to Heisman. He's like an average NFL player.
He was small.
Why does no one ever like call him out for being a bust?
Because four of his offensive linemen were drafted ahead of him, so I think the writing was kind of all the wall with him, right?
Really? Yeah. Okay, see, I didn't know.
John Hicks would probably be a bigger.
How big was RG Griffin?
He's five. He was 5'8", 200.
Oh, okay. He's a little. I mean, I guess back then that was not too small, but
So they ran him. They had a fullback named Pete Johnson back in the day to go real Buckeye on you, who wound up being a fullback for the Bengals for several years. He was a massive dude. At least childhood me thought he was a massive dude. He's probably not that. He's probably like 6'2", 245, which isn't. I mean, that's a big boy, but it's not Derrick Henry size. But they were together at Ohio State, and they wound up being together with the Bengals too. So there was it just didn't work for Archie. He had some injury problems too. He had some knee issues.
Okay,
but yeah.
And that doesn't sound small, too, but like when you talk about today's NFL, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, because I'm kind of talking out of my wheelhouse, but that's back in the days where it was, okay, we're going to hand it off to the biggest – that Earl Campbell, who was a giant, you know, yeah. O.J. who was a big, you know, Eric Dickerson, who was a big dude. So Archie Griffin –
guys like Chuck Muncy and people like Chuck Foreman, big dudes, yeah. I'm trying to remember some of those other guys. Yeah, there was a lot of that big back. Miami Larry had one too. Yeah,
Larry Sanka. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They were just bigger dudes. So Archie just, you know, he ain't gonna take. It just didn't work.
He didn't have the explosive athleticism. He got by. So I when I saw him play in the Horseshoe, I was two. So my memory isn't that great of him, but I remember him winning. From watching when I was a kid as the NFL, he was a similar style to Kareem Hunt in that he's got the low center of gravity, good balance through contact, but isn't a guy who had the dynamic ability to burst out of that in the NFL the way it did. And I think he had knee issues. I actually met Archie and I got a picture with him and I towered over him. This was in like when I was in high school in Columbus, it was like 1988 and he was like, he's like here on me. And I mean, at the time I was like 6'4". So he wasn't nearly as big as I thought he was. Super nice man. Super nice.
Yeah. He's way smaller than me. He wouldn't even, well, the USFL was, I think that's how he ended his career too.
He did end in the USFL.
Yeah, his brother Ray was actually the better of the pros. I think Ray was, I don't know if he was a Pro Bowl or anything, but he was in the NFL for 7-8 years. Yeah. He was also a first round pick, second round pick.
That's going before me. Where's Bill Carroll when we need him?
Yeah, I could do that all day. Talk about like weird Buckeye story. Like, you know, I'm going to see Tom Cousineau in a couple weeks, and like that whole story fascinates me too. That's another guy who spurred. Was he the first guy to spurn the NFL for the CFL?
He was one of them. So I have a Tom Cousineau story. He hit on my mom at in Avon Lake, Ohio, there used to be the Aquamarine Resort. We went there for like a retreat or something. And Tom Cousineau was laying poolside, you know, the chest hair all fluffed out and everything. And the gold chain on, this is like 1980, 81. And he was in the CFL then. He had been done at Ohio State. He was just like coming back and chilling.
He made huge money too. The money. Yeah,
so my mom was in the pool and he was like hitting on her. And my dad's not a small human being. And you know, dude didn't care.
That's wild. That's wild. Yeah, he made huge money over. I didn't realize how, because you know, if you talk to people today, they don't understand. You had Johnny Rogers, Rocket Ishmael, Tom Cousineau. There was a couple other guys that went to the CFL, and you're like, why those? You all people automatically assume it's because they suck. But then you read the stories, and it's like, dude, oh my god, like they were making huge money. Just like when we talked about Paul Warfield last year when he went to the WFL. I mean, the WFL was around for two seasons, and you look back on it, it's just the NFL. It was just the football was a wild, wild west back then. It's crazy, man.
It's different now.
Yeah, I could go down a rabbit hole about all that.
We'll do that sometime. We got to wrap this up though, guys. I got to go to bed.
Yeah.
I gotta be up in 6 hours.
All right, this was the Browns Wire podcast. This is Josh Keeley. You can find me on Twitter at JoshKeeley16. Check out my work at Browns Wire. We are available on all streaming services. Leave us a like, review, all that good stuff. Donovan, where can they follow you at? What do you got going on?
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at DonJamesSports. The name remains the same. I can't talk. I'm in Tennessee now, so new surroundings. But happy to be on the show. Thank you to Jeff. Thank you to Josh. Thank you all for listening. Appreciate it, man. Have a good night.
And thank you, Jeff, for coming on. Anything you want to give a shout out to before we cut it off?
I just got a lot of stuff coming, and whenever any of you guys, y'all want to write something, let me know. my desk is open.
Hey, I'll be pumping out more mock draft stuff. We are out.
That's awesome. Keep them up, and I
You've been listening to us for years.
You know, I've been listening to these commercials for years now. It's funny because every time I would hear the commercial, I would ask myself, why did they wait so long to switch over to AIS? Didn't they know that they could save money?
I mean, I guess some people just like paying more for car insurance.
Meanwhile, I'm loyal to my broker, who's not AIS, by the way, and I'm paying, you know, almost $300 a month for insurance.
So, Will, why did you wait to make the call?
I made excuses to myself. I said, oh, well, my girlfriend is on my policy and, you know, she had an accident. When the accident drops off her record, and of course I'm going to get the savings I deserve.
And how did that work out?
So the day comes and I get a notice from my insurance company that they raised my rate. And I'm like, wait a second, you were supposed to lower my rate. They actually increased it, and that was the final straw. So I just went ahead and called AIS myself.
Yes, and how did it go?
It was unbelievable. They were able to save me $781 on my insurance.
1-800-777-4-AIS.